Your SteveJonesShow.com audio is coming up next. Audio and podcast of The Steve Jones Show, a service of Sunbury Motors, North 4th Street, Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia, Routes 11 and 15, Hummel's Wharf.
Sports talk where your voice counts. This is The Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now, from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Welcome back. Great to have you with us on this Wednesday. By the way, the Lady Lions play a game tonight against Notre Dame in the Jordan Center. Should be a good one tonight, 7:30.
A big Penn State wrestling match coming up here shortly too, isn't there?
Well, it's sold out. It's not a big match.
Let's be realistic here.
Pitt is the wrestling pit. I mean, it's not like they're wrestling Oklahoma State.
You're right. It's
okay. It's big in that it's sold out and they're 15,000. Okay, it is not big in terms of the fact that it's going to be competitive. How about that? It's big because it's going to be great for those kids to wrestle in front of 15,000.
Yeah, I meant it.
That's huge. Yeah,
it's not as big as in competitive match. It's big as in a lot of people will be there. Steve, Bill from Milton would like to talk to you real quick.
Hey, Bill, how are you today?
Oh, pretty good. Hey, I just like to talk about the Steelers. Just want to say I'm a big Steeler fan. I know what Tomlin did was wrong. He should be fined for it. But our football commissioner, I'm sorry, I don't like him at all. I think when you see that tape, you see what happened, you make a decision. Why take so long and the draft picks only hurts the players in the organization, and it was one individual, you know, that did it. Just like it would be if a player went out there and had a personal foul, he gets the penalty, he gets the fine, Roger Goodell, I just think it seems like they all have to get together, whoever, and in a big room and discuss this, when I feel he's the commissioner and he just watches a film and makes a decision and hands it down. What do you think?
Well, I think in this case, the draft choice thing is too extreme. If he did it deliberately and you can prove he did, okay, we can put it on the table and talk about it. But it's obvious in watching it that he strayed and got too close to the field, went on the field, and didn't realize he was in the play, and all of a sudden went, uh-oh, I'm out of the play. The officials were wrong, too. They should have awarded him a touchdown on the spot.
You're correct. I think I wasn't sure about the stadium, but do you think when he had his back to the play and was looking, was he looking up at the monitor and watching the play on the monitor come to him? Because it seemed like he knew just when to step back. And he didn't even see the player coming. Actually, he had his back to everything.
I agree. So, I agree to you. He looked up at the scoreboard, and went, "Oh, geez."
I got to get out of the way.
what he normally does is he'll watch kickoffs and returns on the scoreboard because he gets a better view.
Because when you're on the field, you can't see things well.
Right. Well, back to the commissioner. I mean, I think he fumbled this business with the referees. That was dealt poorly back then. Some of these fines that he's given these players, like Dominic Sue and all them, constantly. And Harris done it too, you know, when he played for the Steelers. I think you watch the film and you make a decision, and within a day or two, you know, after, say, a Sunday they play or whatever, you hand down your decision and that's it. You know, this is the way it's going to be. This is what you're getting done. Let's move on. But it seems like it's such a drawn-out affair, just like, you know, this possible business with the draft pick. Why wait to see where the Steelers finish? If they win the Super Bowl, which we all know they won't do, but are you going to take the draft picks? But if they you know, are the first pick, get the first round, take it away, it's make your decision and then let's move on, you know. That's the way I look at it.
I agree with you, Bill. I think you're right. I mean, look, they fined him. I think that should be the end of it. I mean, it was a finable offense in the NFL because, first of all, you're not supposed to be on the field to begin with. So it's already a finable offense. He disrupted a play. That increases the fine. But there's an end to things instead of taking everything to the nth degree. And Roger Goodell, the fact that somebody's even proposing that they're thinking about a draft pick is an extreme overreaction.
Right. And, you know, there's how many other officials on the field? Is there six, seven? I'm not sure. But I know the one official, there's no doubt that he was watching the guy's feet. He really did. That's a split reaction. But what about the other officials? Why didn't they see that and then huddle up after the play and say, okay, they've done it before. I mean, take for instance when a guy, quarterback grounds the ball. They don't always throw a flag as soon as he lets go of the ball and it's grounding. Sometimes they huddle up. They look at it and see, well, did you see a receiver? And then they assess the penalty. So why didn't they do it this time and assess the guy the touchdown or a 15-yard personal foul or whatever they would have done? But like you said, it was just game play on, you know?
Right. The official was wrong. They should have awarded the touchdown on the spot, which is the penalty for what he did. That is the actual penalty. I mean, they should have awarded him the spot, fined him $100,000, move on. To me, the thing should be over now. He's been fined, and it should be done. The fact they're going to sit there, we're going to talk about a draft pick. No, that's not how you do business.
No. And I've never liked the man. I think he tries to run the league with a lot of other people involved helping him run the league. And I think when you're in that position, you're the man. You make the decision, and you live by it. And like this business with the Redskins and the name and stuff like that, it's just what other group's going to come up and pick on the Eagles, you know what I mean, or the Lions? Who's next and has to change their name? It's just like, no, this is the way it's been for years. It shouldn't be hurting anybody's feelings. This is football, and it's America's game, and let's leave it alone. that's the way I feel anyhow.
I am in complete agreement with you, and I think you're spot on. Okay?
Okay, Steve. And I one thing about the Penn State, I'm an Nittany Lion fan, and I hate to say this, but I hope they find another defensive coordinator because they got the offense, but boy, that game at Wisconsin, I think I passed out three times. And I'm like, they just... It's like, where is your defense and special teams? And it felt like they wanted to give the game away, you know, at one point. But
well, you got to remember, you are talking about a Wisconsin team at home that is 15 in the BCS. I expected them to make a run.
Yeah.
I mean, I always expect that. Well, in the end, they still repelled it, and Seelens Grove's kid took care of business, right?
Right. And I really didn't think that they – if you had asked me before the game, I would have thought Penn State was going to get killed, you know. I just thought Wisconsin has a good, solid running team, and Penn State really couldn't stop anybody all year, really. When they started playing and got up 16 points, I thought, well, you know, they're playing – David Plavery, that was probably their best game of their season, don't you feel? Their best performance?
Yeah,
I mean,
it was the best – Yeah, it was the best all-around offensive and defensive performance. The cover teams were outstanding. The kicking part of the ball was not.
No. And I know with the scholarships, it's tough to have special teams out there. But some of the defensive calls that I've seen this year, I thought they had a better defense than what they put out in the field and what they and their teams.
Now, Bill, I think they got thin there, and I think that's where the sanctions showed up. They were thin at linebacker. You notice the defensive play improved when Hall got healthy, when Bell developed. I mean, when they got Bell developed, Hall healthy, the defense solidified and played better football. I think that played a role in it. That's not all of it, but it played a role in it.
I just felt that their best chance against any team was a team that ran the ball. Other than Ohio State, which ran and threw both, I thought a team primarily that would run the ball, they had a better chance because it just seemed like anybody that had a quarterback, Southern Florida, University of Southern Florida, that just passed the ball, they couldn't stop them at all. I mean,
Central Florida,
Central Florida.
Yeah,
they just, I watched that
kid
game,
is not. But you know what, Bill? That kid's now rated the number two quarterback in the draft.
Right. I mean, he was good. Yes, he was good. But they just, to me, they're almost like a clone of the Steelers. Whoever plays the Steelers and wants to run the ball, the Steelers have got a good chance of winning. But anybody, like, as they play against Brady or anybody else, wants to pass the ball, well, then I pretty much I go out in the garage and work. Okay, well, thanks for taking my call,
Steve. I've been kind of having that feeling on Sundays, Bill, lately.
Okay. Well, thanks for taking my call. That's the only point I wanted to make. I hope Roger
Great.
Goodell, I hope somebody else can fill his shoes here shortly.
Yeah, we'll put you down as a fan club member. Thanks, Bill.
Okay, thanks a lot.
All right, we'll come back with more on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Welcome back. Great to have you with us. Get to Neil Riddell next half hour. Bill is not in the Roger Goodell fan club. It's a shame. But, you know, again, the NFL, what I'm having a problem with the NFL is this. Every time it comes time to discipline, they seem to be attempting every time to do it to the extreme. There doesn't seem to be fairness that matches said crime. Everything's to the extreme.
See, I was thinking when Bill was talking there, Steve. Not to interrupt you, but I wanted to add this. It seems like every time Roger Goodell comes out and makes a fine, it has been a statement fine. It hasn't been a fine for something wrongdoing. It was a statement.
Yeah, and there's too many of those along the way. So
it just seems like every fine is, well, I'm going to make sure nobody wants to do this again. I'm going to make sure nobody does this again. And they do it anyway.
Well, I mean, the $100,000 fine on Tomlin, I thought was going to be the number going in to begin with.
That's
fine. And I think that's the right level. Because one of the things you can't have, and we do see it all the time. Penn State, a year ago, for example, got two sideline penalties, five-yard penalties. And one Penn State opponent this year, I want to say it was Purdue or Illinois, got penalized because an official's running down, the official ran into somebody on the sideline.
That's supposed to be an automatic penalty right there.
Right, and that's what happens. I mean, so he's running down the sideline, and when Tomlin backed up, yeah, he backed up, but, you know, he was still in the way of the official covering the play. I mean, technically. Well, and so the fine is justified. When you start talking about draft choices, to me, draft choices are an organizational problem, okay? The organization deliberately blew by the cap and said, so what about the rules and, you know, whatever, and did whatever. Spygate, okay? Another thing where you're accused of, okay, and when you're getting ready for a game. What happened with the New Orleans Saints? Definitely another thing, you know, with how they handled things, and Sean Payton is out for a year. And Mickey Loomis, the general manager, is, you know, suspended 8 games and so forth. Everything he did with Bountygate.
The only way a draft pick in my mind makes sense is if that if the Steelers and Ravens are sitting at, say, I'm just pulling out numbers, 13 and 14, and one win would have made the difference. Then
yeah.
I could understand the draft pick switching because that
right.
play did.
I agree with that.
Did impact the game if the Steelers would have won it, but they didn't.
Right.
So it didn't really matter.
I understand that. Yeah, I agree with you completely. I think you're spot on. I think that your point is exactly right, and that's why when they left it on the table, I thought, what are you leaving it on the table for? This is not a draft offense. If he did it multiple, say this was his second time doing it, where you sit back and go, what the heck's he doing? He's already been fined once $100,000. Was he trying to do influence the game? See how it becomes a legitimate question at that point?
I totally agree with that, yeah.
Yeah, but it's not. And you can just tell. I mean, common sense tells you when you watch him, he's looking at the scoreboard and went, oh, my goodness. Yeah, you could just see it. You can just see it. And I wish they would have more common sense as to how they handle things. And to me, there's always got to be a thing. What's the truth? What's the fairness? The truth was he stepped on the field. The truth is he interfered with the play. The truth is, in watching it, common sense tells you it was inadvertent. But you know what? At the same time, he also knows he's not supposed to be there. Okay, let's start with that. Because there is a rule about, hey, look, where you're supposed to be. You're supposed to be within the 25s. You're supposed to be back of the white border. Hey, that's where you're supposed to be. So, yeah, so was he, it's like the basketball coach that constantly goes 3 to 4 feet out of the coaching box. Now, is that a technical foul? Yes, it is an automatic technical foul. Do they call the technical foul? No, they don't, because you're trying to have common sense, and you look at the coach every once in a while and go, hey, Pat, get back in the box. Dave, get back in the box. Like, that's common sense. That's good officiating. That is not being, as Marv Levy would say, an over-officious jerk.
One of my favorite NFL films.
It's an over-officious jerk. And then he looks over at the assistant coach and says, I went to college with that official. I went to college with that guy. It's like, oh, okay. Makes it a lot better. So.
Switching quickly to college basketball before we get to the news, or college football, rather, before we get to the news. I know a lot of the championship games are this weekend. How quickly after those championship games are done are we going to start to hear about bowl invitations?
Well, you should be hearing about bowl invitations now for schools left and right this week, because once you get down in tier, you know, it's pretty obvious who's going where. So you're going to hear a lot of bowl acceptances between now and the end of the week as to where teams are going.
I think I've only...
It officially comes out on Sunday.
Yeah, I think I've only heard of maybe about five right now. Arkansas State, Navy, if they're eligible, will go to the Armed Forces Bowl. BYU, if they're eligible, will go to the Fight Hunger Bowl. And then Louisiana Lafayette, Tulane, and the New Orleans Bowl.
Right. And you'll get, and by Sunday morning, you'll have all those. They'll weed themselves out. You have to see, okay, Arizona State, Stanford, for example. You know, the winner of that game goes to the Rose Bowl. The loser is not probably in the BCS. Okay, next. Michigan State, Ohio State. Michigan State, of course, trying to play its way into the championship game. Michigan State's thinking about the Rose Bowl. The Big Ten still thinks it can get two BCS-eligible teams. Well, Michigan State, if they lose, would have to stay in the top 14. So that has to weed itself out. Which conferences can't fulfill all their bowl bids? That now has a domino effect on what goes on. Say, for example, the Big Ten cannot fulfill its bowl obligations for the Little Caesars Bowl in Detroit. Well, you're going to have two non-Big Ten teams in there, and it affects other conferences as to what they do. And this is going to be the problem you're going to have next year with three more bowl games. You're talking about six more bowl-eligible teams that have to be available next year with a pool of 38, plus the national championship game.
Well, isn't the Heart of Dallas Bowl one of those bowl games that's not going to see a Big Ten team in it?
Probably not.
Because they look for the, what, seven, right?
Yeah, so the ones that are not eligible in the Big Ten are Indiana, Purdue, Northwestern, Illinois, and Penn State. So there are only seven eligible teams in the Big Ten. But if, for example, Ohio State does get to the national championship game, now how do the other six fall into play? And does it start with the Rose Bowl or not? Because if Ohio State's eligible for the national championship game, the Rose Bowl is not obligated to select a Big Ten team. Perfect example is the year Oregon played Auburn. Well, who did Wisconsin play in the game? Not a Pac-12 team. They played TCU. News next. Then we'll check in with Neil Riddell on News Radio 1070 WKOK.
T
Taking your calls at 800-795-9565. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now, from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
All right, time to hit the email bag. Here from the Chateau, the Sunbury Motors Studio. Also, the phone line's open at 800-795-9565. What is in the email bag? Oh, great one.
Listener wants to know why you let Fisher and Vanderlyn go. Fisher obviously has done well with the quarterbacks over the years, and you know there have been a lot of really good linebackers at Penn State as well.
Well, the official release is that they resigned to pursue other opportunities. So, I mean, the assumption that's being made is, you know, they were let go. They may have been let go or they may have resigned. I don't know. The official word is that they resigned to pursue other opportunities. Well, Charlie Fisher will get another job. There's no question about that. He's had a really good career, especially at Vanderbilt. He did really well. Did a fine job here in 2 years. Now we'll see how Bill wants to structure the staff because Bill personally does a lot of work with the quarterbacks himself. Ron Vanderlinden, I mean, the long list of linebackers is certainly impressive. Ron will be a hot commodity, and Ron, over the past, has looked for other jobs. I mean, Ron, every year, Ron's looking for jobs. Always has been. And I like him a lot personally, but I also know that, you know, that he has applied for other jobs along the way. He's always personally had the mentality of being on a year-by-year basis at Penn State. And I know this from all the times I've talked with him, which is fine. I think he still harbors to be a head coach someday. Like he harbors at minimum to still be a defensive coordinator someday. So that's why when they talk about, you know, resigning to pursue other opportunities, they're both pursuing other opportunities. Kevin is stunned.
Just listening intently.
Right. And we bring in Neil Riddell, Altoona Mirror. Neil, great to have you with us, and to you and yours. I know this is the tail end. Happy Hanukkah.
Thank you, Steve.
First of all, let's get to Wisconsin, and then we'll move to the next item on the list. What did you think about the performance that you saw, and was it unexpected to you?
Well, yeah, I would... although I picked him to cover, so I should get some credit for that, because actually most guys that we talked to and read didn't even really have them within a touchdown. So when you look at the betting line these last few times when Penn State has been a 15 plus, they've usually gotten pounded over the last 10 years or so. So I was surprised, that they won the game for sure. Pleasantly surprised. I think it's really the high moment of Bill O'Brien's tenure so far. It kind of goes to show you how the resolve that they have coached with and the leadership they've had the last 2 years to be able to end the season on that kind of note really has just really been... built a lot of momentum for the offseason. Yeah, I congratulate them. I think it was a heck of a win.
We obviously can't predict the future. Let's face it, if we sat here 4 years ago and discussed the future, we would have been completely wrong about virtually everything. Fair enough. To sit here and speculate a bit on this particular day, Neil, do you think now that they're getting scholarships back and we think the door could be open maybe to some stuff later on next year, is this potentially the bottoming out of it, or are you in a wait-and-see mode?
Well, I mean, probably both. I heard today that Bortles is ranked maybe the second quarterback potentially available, and that could make a big difference because, you know, after that game, you thought, oh, geez, you know, now you're going to go over to Ireland and you could lose to them twice. Yeah. But the way Penn State ended, and if Central Florida would lose their quarterback, I just think Penn State's really well positioned. I don't think, and this is probably why Bill O'Brien took some offense to after the Illinois game. Did you consider yourself fortunate? Questions, because you know I think that every game is going to be a real challenge, and I think we saw that this year. Mm-hmm. Yeah, they kind of controlled Wisconsin, and maybe they're on the uptick, but I don't know that there's going to be enough depth, particularly upperclassmen depth, right, to just assume a lot of things. I think we may continue to see a pattern, Steve, of maybe there's a game or two that they lose that you don't expect, and there may be some surprises when you least expect. So, you know, I haven't looked close enough to the schedule to see what I'm going to predict for them for next year.
Sure.
Yet. I know you're not asking me that. Thank
mm-hmm.
you.
No.
But, you know, I don't know that they're totally out of the woods as far as for, you know, to go pick them 9-3 or 10-2.
Yeah. The reason I won't ask that is that it's also a question I never take.
Right.
I never take it. Man, and I get everywhere I go to speak, I get asked all the time. Now, I'll give you an example. Say, for example, you go out there and say, you know what? They're going to be 11-1. What's the first question?
Which is the game they're going to lose?
Yeah, exactly right. That's why you don't. And that's why I don't do it. I'm like, forget it. I'm not going to bother. I tell everybody what every other team has and so forth, but I don't give a record. Now, you talk about like looking ahead to next year. This is going to be a very young football team because they may be able to get, if they can get 2 to 4 early entries, they can get anywhere from 22 to 24 recruits in this class. That still means it's a very young football team, right?
Yeah, although they're going to have, I mean, we're talking about 15, potentially 15 starters back.
Yeah.
So, and you're going to have some experience at some key spots. You know, I think with the way the Bell kid came on at linebacker and mm-hmm. the fact that, you know, you would think Hull would be healthier, hopefully, than he was most of this year. And getting Klein back, I mean, for a while it looked like that position was going to be a problem, but maybe it'll be even be a strength. I think the offensive line will be an area that I'll be interested to see how well they are able to retool that. But you know, to start with a quarterback and a quarterback that's coming off that kind of performance, you know, I think they're, like I said, pretty well positioned going into the off season. I do think they have to address their special teams and maybe reevaluate the, you know, they'll need a punter, and we know he's graduating, but I'm not sure. You know, Ficken has just been so up and down, and I know there's a lot of pressure and overtime and things, but they got to get that right.
We know that Penn State officially released yesterday that Charlie Fisher and Ron Vanderlinden resigned to pursue other opportunities. For you, when you look at now the opportunity Bill O'Brien has, how important do you think it is for him in molding his staff moving forward that is the right fit for him and the right fit for what they need to do down the road here?
Well, that kind of caught me by surprise. You know, I'm guessing that they have some parts in place because I don't think that just happens on the Monday or the Sunday right after the season without some kind of a plan. You know, so I don't know whether you'll see, you know, more NFL flavor. I don't know. You know, I do think Vanderlinden particularly did a tremendous job over a long period of time in developing great players, guys, you know, that are really making their mark at the NFL level. So I'll be curious. I think it's been a very interesting couple years, and I think they've pushed a lot of right buttons. I have confidence that he knows what he needs or what he wants, and you know, I'm not surprised. I think in the sense that you know, recruiting, and I know Vanderlinden was a good recruiter, but I would think that they're going to continue to have that mode of a lot of the guys are out there recruiting, if
yeah.
not all.
Right. No, exactly. And, I think he has a plan moving forward as to what he wants to do. And now we'll see how he wants to play it out. And slowly but surely we'll find out who the two new coaches happen to be.
I would guess because of you're into a fertile recruiting period now because yeah. they're not going to a bowl game. I would think it would probably happen reasonably quickly.
Basketball. I'm sure you watched Penn State Pitt last night. I know Corey was at the game last night.
Yeah, we had two guys at the game. Mike Boyden was also there. And I was very entertained, and I thought that Penn State really, you know, based on how they've played at Pitt in the past, I didn't have a ton of expectation, but I thought that they exceeded that and really played hard. I thought Frazier was the best player on the floor.
Yeah.
And just, you know, I think Penn State and Pitt ought to be playing everything every year. I know sometimes our conversations morph into this, Steve, but I just thought it was just an event mentality to it, and it just was really Penn State, I think, was equal to the moment and, you know, probably got beat by a better team and maybe wore down inside a little bit. But I thought it was a very representative performance.
Yeah, no, I thought they played well. They played as well as I thought they would play last night, except for maybe one spot. Other than that, because in the pregame, I said essentially the same thing you said. I said, look, I've done a number of games in this building, and the games have been uncompetitive. All right? And I think that's a very fair statement on my part. I sat there and watched it. But I said that tonight will be different. I said this will be down to the wire competitive all the way through. I think Pitt's really, really good. They're 8-0. They took Stanford and woodshedded them for good mistakes. But I think you saw last night that Penn State's really good. And you're right. The moment was not too big for them. I think they were up to the moment. It turned out if the moment were in their building, it might have helped a little bit. I think location helped a little bit last night. I don't mean in officiating. I'm talking about an emotion and things like that that comes into play.
Yeah, and I would guess that if Penn State felt that if they could hold Pitt into the 70s, that maybe that was going to be fairly encouraging, being that Penn State has not been real good defensively. You know, one thing, Steve, a 7-0 Pitt team unranked, that surprised me that Pitt still has not been ranked.
Yeah, and I'm surprised about that as well because they played a good schedule. I like their team for the most part. If they had Frazier, I'd love that team. but Patterson's very, very good. I think Patterson's very, very good. I thought Robinson played pretty well. Zanna's an experienced kid who's really improved a lot and gives them a little bit of an inside presence. Yeah, I mean, because how many three-point plays did he end up attempting last night? The conventional three-point play. And not only that, Pitt is and this was one of the pregame points I made as well last night. Pitt's very hard to beat in the last 4 minutes. Why? Because they're an outstanding free throw shooting team. Free throw shooting kept them in the game in the first half. Free throw shooting helped them get that margin at the end.
Yeah.
And that's huge.
I thought Penn State, like I said, played with a lot of poise, played really hard, and it should bode well when they go on the road in the Big Ten.
Yeah. So I think so as well. No bowl game, obviously, for Penn State for the second straight year. They lose out on the bowl practice, but you mentioned the recruiting part of it. What do they need more right now, Neil, the recruiting part of it or some extra bowl practice for younger players?
Well, I guess the way that they structured their Monday practice may have achieved some of that. You know, I think with the fact that they got some scholarships restored and going forward can get a jump on the underclassmen. You know, I don't know. I mean, we saw enough bowl games and at a 7-5, you don't know, you know, exactly what the mindset is for a team that's 7-5, although this team has played with a really strong, you know, kind of prove yourself type of mentality. But when you have some upperclassmen maybe aren't sure, and I'm not sure what Robinson's going to end up doing, you just don't know sometimes. Well, I thought with the 0-2 team that there were maybe some situations where guys were looking ahead. So I think that's one of the built-in flaws in the bowl system, unless you're in one of the big games.
Neil, it's always a pleasure.
I guess the answer would be, you know, because they have no choice to go out and recruit.
Right, exactly. Yeah, they have no choice. In the end, they're, you know, a speculative question means nothing because right now they have no choice but to recruit. So,
right.
Hey, Neil, as always, a pleasure. Thanks so much for the time, buddy.
Hey, thanks, Steve. Have a good show.
And that's Neil Riddell. We'll wrap it up in a moment on News Radio 1070 WKOK.
Ready for a quality pre-owned vehicle? Well, get them before they go to auction at Sunbury Motors. Go to sunburymotors.com and click on pre-auction blowout. Like a 2011 Ford Explorer Limited, only 12,000 miles, $34,999. 2010 Lincoln MKX, just one owner, $24,955. 2012 Kia Optima LX comes with the Carfax buyback guarantee, just $16,399. 2012 Hyundai Sonata, accident-free, fully serviced, just $13,796. And a like-new 2012 Ford Focus SE, lowest price promise, just $16,961. Call 570-286-7746.
All come with the Carfax report and our lowest price promise. Pre-auction blowout.
See the full inventory and schedule a test drive and see what your trade is worth, too, at sunburymotors.com.
At the North 4th Street Auto Plaza, Sunbury, and at our dealership, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Sunbury Motors, a tradition of trust since 1915.
All right, welcome back. Thanks to Neil Riddell for being on the show. Our thanks as well to Frank Schwab for being on the show today. And Kevin, who has started the Mike Tomlin Fund, which I really was touching. That was great. Happy holidays.
I don't think he needs my help with a fund. I think he'll be just fine.
Good. You know, it's, I'm sure he'll be just fine. But you know what? The NFL does, there's too many statement things. I mean, and that's the part. And you made that point, and I think you're right. And I think Bill made the same point too. All right. And the point is that every time you turn around, Roger Goodell feels he needs to make a statement. Now, there's certain things that are built into the National Football League Players Association, okay, in their deal. Okay. So you do follow that. And that is, you know, for example, drug policy, 4-game suspensions. I think they handled the Von Miller thing right by giving him 2 additional games. Okay. So the NFL did right by on that one because he lied to them. So he got 6. The Sean Payton thing, I never agreed with. I thought a full season was absolutely excessive. And I thought if they had suspended him maybe for half a season, okay, I could buy that. I could buy that. But a full season? No, I could not buy that. The Sean Payton suspension bugged me. Now the Tomlin thing, if they do something when it comes to a draft pick, to me, again, that's going to bother me. That's over the top. And they've got to stop over the top to make it seem like they're the tough cop out there.
You know, there's one thing in that game, though, Steve, though, that is overlooked because now of the Tomlin incident. And that was the helmet-to-helmet contact on the what should have been a touchdown run by Le'Veon Bell.
Right, I agree with that.
Why wasn't there a fine for that? I mean, all right, if we're going to fine after the fact, which I don't agree with, I don't agree with the fine after the fact if it wasn't a penalty on the field, why wasn't that looked at?
Agreed. I'll say this. Okay, I would not have fined on that play. And you want to know why?
Okay.
Because they're both low. You know, the one thing that's one thing that's been really detrimental about the fine part of it. I will fine excessively if I think the play is deliberate.
But here's the problem, Steve.
What's bothering me is that too often, just let me finish this point.
Go ahead.
What bothers me is that too often you'll see either a running back or a receiver moving, and all of a sudden they lower themselves, and they lower themselves into the hit.
Absolutely agree with you. The running back gets low, and they lower themselves into the hit.
Right.
I understand that.
And they lower, or the wide receiver lowers themselves into the hit, where a hit that was going to be probably shoulder to mid-level chest or ribs ends up being a hit to the head.
But here's the problem. When you look at this play, Smith hits him with the crown of the helmet in the ear hole of Bell's helmet, which then tells me, I don't care how low the running back was, that is the crown of the helmet, and that is a helmet-to-helmet by definition. He ducks his head. He does not have his head. If the helmet hits, if the face mask hits, or the you know the bridge of the helmet, no problem.
Agreed.
I get that.
Yep, you're spot on. Yep, I agree. And that's the key is the crown of the helmet, because that happens to be the point of emphasis. Actually, for the running back, that's the Trent Richardson rule.
Right. Yeah.
Running
that's
backs
exactly right.
are said. Now, I haven't seen that call once this year, but I haven't seen every call this year either. I don't recall in a game I watched seeing that play called where the offensive guy was hit with.
I just think the NFL has to get a little bit more consistent, not necessarily with a call on the field, but the definition of what the fine's going to be and what's going to cause a fine 3 days later.
So they spent all this time talking about the Tomlin play.
Right.
They fine him $100,000, which I agree with. But then talk about draft picks, which I vehemently disagree with. But they never bring up anything about the helmet, in which the Le'Veon Bell helmet ends up 8 yards deep in the end zone.
Which, by the way, stops it from being a touchdown, because when the helmet goes off, the play's whistled dead right where that helmet...
It's automatic.
You know.
Yeah, it's automatic. But Bell might actually play this week.
That's what amazed me. He has one more test to pass, I guess, tomorrow.
And John Urschel's taking it for him. All right. Hey, Andy Staples today suggested John Urschel as SI Sportsman of the Year. Classy. Talk to you tomorrow.